Hello, bowlers. Welcome to our talk today, which is going to be of Euros. So just to start off, we have our members Shubham, Aditya and Nihar with us who would be talking. And I would like to start off, by mentioning that, after the pandemic, this is the first international tournament that's going to be taking place. And also, this time is pretty different, wherein there's no particular host nation, and we've got 11 different cities wherein the matches will be happening. And also, this is the 60th birthday of the UEFA European Championship. So it is going to be a special one. And, we're all excited. And we'll see how it goes. Now, to start off with, let's refresh all our memories a little bit. I would like to start with, our favorite Euro moments, that we have started or, that we have come across. It can be any two teams or any match, need not be the final or semis, but it could be anything that you have liked the most. So, yeah, let's start listening to our panel members. Let's start with Shubham.
So, yes, my favorite moment from the Euros would definitely be from the last Euros, because I did not watch the previous one, like the one before that. So it was from the game between Portugal and Hungary. So actually in that game, they had to win. Portugal had to win to go even through the group stages round. And one of my favorite footballers, Ronaldo, scored a hat-trick in that game. And it was a perfect hat-trick over there. So, I mean, that was something memorable. And because of that particular performance, it moved ahead in the Euros and won the Euros, thanks to the final goal from one of the players. I don't even remember his name now. What was his name? Do you guys remember?
The final penalty kick?
No, Eder. No, the final.
Eder.
Eder, yes. Eder, right? Yeah, that was surreal, dude. So yeah, that would be my favorite moment from that Euros.
All right, yeah, that was a winning moment of Portugal. I'm sure a lot of members would have a similar moment as well as their favorite. So good call, Shubha. Now moving on, let's listen to Aditya.
I mean, mine is not a kind of favorite moment. It's kind of like a weird moment. It is the final one where Ronaldo, gets injured. I think midway match, and then at the end of the match he starts. At the end of the match he starts. Cheering up, starts coaching, sometimes telling players where to move. I mean, that was amazing, man. Ronaldo doing that on the pitch. I just love that. Watching a player, trying to do what a coach does or a manager does, it's amazing. I love that moment.
Oh yeah,
then Eder going scoring in the, that was amazing.
Oh yes, definitely. I think a lot of us would remember that moment where Ronaldo was so excited on the sidelines, right? He almost got the coach on the ground. He was, encouraging all his team members. He was pushing all of them, and he kind of was a leader that day, inspiring them to win the Euro. So yeah,
no,
very,
but
very
one
nice,
of the that one thing that I regret about is I slept off just around when they scored the goal, and I woke up when they were lifting the trophy. That was like heartbreaking.
Well, something to. Look forward to when you got up. But it's a funny moment that, you fell asleep watching the final. But anyways, nice. You got up right in time to watch them lift the trophy. So good timing now there, you could say.
Yeah.
Nice one, Aditya. All right, let's listen to Nihar. What is your favorite moment, buddy?
Like, I didn't really see the match back then because I was having literally no idea. But when I started watching football, I went back and watched the entire match. I think the final one was between Spain and Italy in Euro 2012 final. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the finest any international played the tiki-taka football, according to me. I mean, Spain were good in World Cup before, but I think they were better in Euros there. I mean, they were unstoppable. I mean, being a fan of this tiki-taka football, the short-passing football, I really loved them. I guess that's my final thing, because the damage they caused to Italy, I think Italy fell down so bad later. Now they're picking up though, but yeah, that's my final.
Which World Cup was that? Oh, which Euros was that? Which year?
2012.
Okay.
The end of Spain's dominance, I guess, to be precise, because the age and all. So, Lokesh, what is your finest moment you ever faced? I mean, you ever felt regarding the Euros?
For me, I'm a German fan. I love the Germans. And I remember in 2016, the year where Portugal won, in the, I think, quarterfinals where Germany played Italy. You know, it was a very tense match. And, you know, it was even Stevens for both, because it ended in a draw. And the game went on to penalties. I still remember I was so nervous. I hate penalties. I don't think that's a fair way of deciding a match. But then, however, it went to penalties. And that in that game, there were about 18 kicks, 18 spot kicks that were taken. And finally, Germany won. As such, you know, I was like, yes, this could be the luck that they needed to go forward and win the tournament. I was so excited that day. But then, however, they could not go on to win it, losing in the next stage itself. But, however, that match against Italy and having the penalty shootout with, 18 kicks being there. And I remember Matteo Darmian, he was the one who missed for Italy. And, he was being scouted for United just a few years later. It was a brilliant memory, to jog, where Germany won the penalty kick. So, yeah, that was my favorite memory. I think it's a nice start where, all of us have shared our favorite moments. It would be, a good reminder for all of us of the previous tournaments. Now, talking of that, going forward, since Portugal won that year, what do you have to say for, the team back then, the way they went on to win it?
So, as Shubha? In the team was okayish, not the top-notch team. I remember Italy were the favorites to win that Euro. I think Conte was their manager back then. And... that was the one which was the bookies' favorite. But yeah, out of nowhere, Portugal came and stunned everyone. The squad, coming to a question, squad was okayish. Ronaldo always lethal up front. And at times, even he was saving them from getting eliminated. As I mentioned previously, the Hungary game where they had to score and had to win. They somehow drew, and just because of goal difference and all that, they just went through the tournament. And the team was okayish, not the brilliant. Renato Sanchez was there, I remember, in 2016. And the normal stuff there.
All right. What did you make of that winning team, Aditya?
It was at best, it's kind of like, it's kind of like Leicester team where, they are filled with the small players who can do great, but there's one player like who's very great. Kind of like that. They didn't have much, you would not see that Portugal team looking, you say, yeah, they can win, they can beat France, they can do this. Somehow they just did some, it's one of those stories where, you always root for the underdogs. It's kind of like that.
All right.
But if you look at the current Portugal team, it's very much different from the Portugal team back then.
Okay, so what do you make of their team this time? The last time you compared them to Leicester. What do you think of their team this time, Aditya?
Just a quick one. They are filled with, really talented players, from Bruno to João Felix to Diego Jota. Even in defense, I think they have Ruben Dias. They have really good players now. They can, they can really be for the years to maybe in the next World Cup, they can also make an impact. It has to be, if the team can play together well, then they can surely win trophies.
I would like to make a point here. Earlier, as Envy mentioned, they were mostly like Leicester. Now they are more like Wolves. So, Wolves.
So, they have a better team this time. You could say they're more like a Tottenham team. They have a good team.
But exactly.
Again, can't.
Yeah, the Tottenham that reached to finals in what?
So, Nihar, can you weigh in on your what do you think of what did you think of Portugal's victory and what do you think of their team this time?
See, Portugal has been on two sides actually. When they lost in 2004 final against Greece, Greece were the literal underdogs. Luck didn't favor them. But 2016, yeah, they did their work, but even luck was there on their side. It's like stars were aligned for them to win. France had an off day and they won. Group stage three matches they drew, they went through, they scraped through every match. Ronaldo saved them in two matches. Rest of them, he kind of struggled. Everyone struggled. Still, they found their way through somehow. And yeah, they were pretty good. I mean, you can't say deservingly, well-deserving champions. But yeah, they were champions anyway. But coming to now, yeah, I mean, they're one of the favorites. But they are, according to me, they are also the favorites to get out from the group stage. It's like if they cross the group stage, they can be in final. Or they can go before the group stage. I mean, it's like, how to say, I'm on an extreme ends here. I can't really make my mind up here.
All right, yeah, if they get through the group stages, yeah, we shall talk about the group stages later on. But yeah, as you mentioned, they do have a good team this time. Now, let's talk about another topic here. You know, this is going to be the first international tournament after the pandemic. So how do you think the changes will be there compared to the previous tournaments, wherein in terms of, say, preparation, and expectations? Yeah, let's start with Nihar this time. What do you think, say, post-pandemic, first international tournament, expectations and preparations for players and managers?
Post-pandemic, see, already these players are heavily fatigued by the bubble environment and all. Now they have to endure it for one more month. It's going to be a tough thing. So you really can't expect the high-quality performance from players if they are in like a strict environment for over like 1 year. It's been 1 year already now, right? And also, yeah. I think, what about the fans' perspective? I don't think the fans are allowed into the stadiums in every match, I guess, right?
Fans will be allowed.
Every stadium, right?
Yeah, every stadium. Limit. So, there would be a percentage.
Yeah, so that might become the approach for the players to perform too. Because obviously, with fans around, players tend to get motivated and everything. But, you know, I don't expect high-quality performances. Maybe I'm expecting some boring draws also. I really don't see any team trashing the other.
Boring draws like a tactical stalemate?
Yeah, yesterday you saw how Portugal and Spain played it out. It's like, you can watch it through a tactical point of view, but as a fan, you won't get entertained. That's what I could feel.
Moving on to Aditya. Let's continue from where Nihar left off. But don't you think international tournaments are always more of a tactical battle?
The team which are more, it's more of, you know, when you play for a club, you play for a season, right? So you know how the players play with each other. You know what kind of run a player will make, what kind of run Ronaldo will make, what kind of run Benzema will. So you are more adjusted to them. But international, it's different. You have, it's short. They play with themselves with short number of time, short, very small games. So, it takes time to gel together. So, any team that is gelled very well, they know each other well, is the team that is going to win. That's my opinion.
So, could you just touch upon, say, expectations as a fan and, say, players in terms of post-COVID?
I mean, for fans, I think it's okay. I think... depending upon the city they're gonna play in, if they're the COVID cases are not that much, fans will be allowed. That's what I was reading in the 2020 Euro site. And as for players, I think it's good for them. Some players like Jordan Henderson or some English players who who are carrying injuries but have to play. Looking at the club perspective, it will be bad for them, and the clubs will be thinking like, why don't you just leave them off? But as a player, they will be, I think, you know, proud to, you know, represent their country in a tournament and probably bring back a...
Yeah, good point you mentioned there, wherein, you know, no matter what situation it is, for all the players, it's still a very proud moment for them to be representing their countries. So, yeah, let's take it further with Shubham and your inputs.
As you mentioned just now, the youngsters which did not get a chance like previously with their club teams, basically, they have a big, big chance to perform with their national team. So if you see players who sit on the bench of the top sides, they are the main starters of their national sides over here. So they really have a good opportunity to perform and tell their managers that, see, I am worth this thing. So if they go on and give a good performance, even by one or two matches, I mean, their career can take off from there. So that is the, from the player's perspective. From fans' perspective, what I want to see from this Euros is more competitive matches. As we have seen previously, right? We have seen dead rubbers like 0-0 draw, 1-1 draw, tactical battles. I get it that it is a way to win a tournament. But if you see from a viewer's perspective, what I would like to see is more of a close contest, last minute goals and things like that. So, I mean, who doesn't want that basically? So, yeah, that is what I would like to see rather than a 0-0 draw and people trying to push with go ahead with three draws and one win and things like that. So, I mean, competitive football should be there. And coming to players' tiredness, what I don't want to see is horizontal passing basically. So, I mean, yeah, players will be down. From coming from bubble and the long season. But yeah, once the national pride is at stake, I think they will perform at their level best.
Well, nice. Nicely put out of there. Well, I can agree with say most of the points mentioned. And, you know, I would like to just touch upon the preparation part and expectations a little as well. As you mentioned, yes, it's been a very long season with a lot of matches being crammed and, you know, the players could be tired and it can have an effect on the teams. So I do expect for a slow start. I don't think it'll be blistering, you know, matches initially. I think it'll take time before which, you know, the matches start getting exciting. But until then, I kind of agree with Nihar. Wherein, you know, things will be more of a tactical battle and it could be boring to watch for a lot of fans. But yeah, I would like it to happen like what Shubham mentioned. We don't want to see, you know, lax passes, just playing it to each other and, you know, getting 10 passes amongst two players in defense and then going forward to midfield, having 10 passes there. And then trying a long ball and, you know, missing it out. No one wants to watch that, of course. So, yeah, that's what we expect. But, you know, I hope we don't push too much expectations on the players and managers because, you know, it's a very sensitive time. And so I would like to, you know, bring on this topic of mental health, wherein it's very challenging for everyone, you know, to do things on the field and off the field. It's one thing to be physically fatigued, but then it's another thing to be, you know, mentally fatigued. And I think that's more of a battle for everyone, especially the ones who are playing, that, you know, they're more, it's more challenging when compared to any of the previous tournaments, because any of the previous tournaments, they didn't have such kind of a pandemic situation as such that they had to face through and then come up. So I would say, you know, let's be a little courteous, show some love towards all of them, even the organizers, the players, the managers, the staff, the volunteers. You know, let's be a little more supportful towards them because, you know, taking care of each other is the point, you know, is the hour of the need as well. So I would say, like, you know, let's be a little easy. Let's, you know, accept a few matches the way, even if it is boring, you know, let's not be too critical. And as Shubha mentioned, there are a lot of more youngsters who are playing this time. And it's very instrumental that, you know, they are not burdened with over expectations, because we have seen a lot of people burning out, or, you know, say not reaching their potential. And so let's not have that is a suggestion that I would put across. So what would you want to tell, or, you know, just your opinion on mental health issues, or say factors?
So from mental perspective, I mean, the players have been through a lot this season. Okay. From mental health perspective, basically what the players would be experiencing is a lot of fatigue coming into this tournament, because all they want is a holiday at this point, right? I mean, they have played entire season, and what they'll be looking forward is towards a very nice holiday. So from mental perspective, they will be at least happy to reach, at least they can see the light at the end of the tunnel, right? We have been into this rabbit hole, and now they are at least coming out of it. So that is one part. Coming to the other ones, that is the organizers and broadcasters, because see, from an organization perspective, this thing has been moved to 1 year back, like 1 year forward. So there has been revenue losses and things like that. And that does impact people who work at the background. If you see from the, you know, the ones who manage things out, the broadcasters, the people who are there getting the sponsors and all, I get it. They will get the sponsors because it is Euros. But yeah, the pressure has been there, because in events like this, they just want to get it done with. If you see from the financial perspective, so they will not care about if it gets boring matches or not, because sponsor will still stay. But they just want to get things done and get the money pumped in, because their salaries and increments might have been stuck because of this pandemic and 1 year push. So that's my perspective from that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, not just that. I mean, you see, I think the England friendlies, the last match, they were being booed as they were taking the knee. So that will also affect. I mean, that's just crazy. That the fans are booing when they're doing something, you know, very instrumental. I mean, that's very weird to see. I mean, that also affects their mind. But I think it should not affect. They should be able to, you know, get over it. Yeah, it's a big tournament. It should not be, you know, not that effective.
Yeah, I would like to add on one more thing to this mental health. I mean, the players have been through a lot this entire season, and they really deserve a break now, because generally before even these kind of tournaments, the players generally take a 2 week off and then join the national teams or something. But right now the situation isn't like that. They have to join the team bubble. That's a very stressful thing. And yeah, whoever fans who are coming back to the stadiums to watch, they shouldn't boo the players at least now. Even if the team is losing, the player is performing bad, they should stick with them, because the players are really missing the fans. And imagine a good player really have his off day or something, and the fans are booing him. How bad he would feel. I mean, that player would be wishing for fans to return. And when they return and that they boo him, I mean, that's a very traumatizing experience for anyone to be in. So I really hope the fans will not be that stupid and stubborn. And even the online abuse shouldn't be encouraged. I mean, there was a campaign going on. And I really hope this entire online abuse reduces now, because I mean, I think they can use this Euros as a cornerstone to implement that, because players from several clubs are coming together. So that creates actually a friendly experience for the people who are watching too. For example, see like Jadon Sancho and Rashford, Pogba, Mbappe. Like these players are like opposite rivals, and yeah, they're opposite teams. They often face each other in UCL. So when they see together gelling up well, that's like a efficient thing to watch now. So yeah, that's my take on this.
Yeah, so, all right. Yeah, very nice points by everyone. And yeah, I like this point by Nihar, where, you know, fans should not boo players. or you know, for bad performance or say lethargic performances. So I agree very much on that. So yeah, let's hope for a very good tournament where, you know, we're quite easy on the players, but it should not take away anything from them to give it their best with whatever they have, because we still like to, you know, it's still expected of them to do it. So yeah, now keeping all that in mind, the president, you know, Alexander Seferin, he's should give a lot of credit to the organizers also, I would say, because it's a very stressful thing to be planning something well in advance. And, you know, he is very confident of, say, conducting the tournament, even with, say, lesser places or stadiums or cities. And depending on, you know, the COVID situation on real-time basis, because a major event needs a lot of planning. And anything that changes, you know, will make a lot of difference to a lot of aspects. And here he is, he's, you know, the organizers and with the World Health Organization, they're all together along with national governments. And they're putting in a very good effort to make this happen. So kudos to them for that. Now, just about a few changes in terms of rules this time. I think the 5 substitutions are being allowed this time to cater to the problem of fatigue and fixture congestion. And, you know, there's a 6th substitution that will be allowed if the match goes to extra time. So I would just like to know from the members, how much of a strategy do you think this change will affect this time?
Oh, it will definitely change. I mean, if you look at France, I mean, let's say if, you know, Giroud is on the bench, let's say some superstar is on the bench, you can bring on that superstar. Or just look at England, when Rashford is playing, then Sancho can come on. You can completely, you know, change the outlook of the team, you know, differently. I mean, if 120, you know, 60 minutes, 90 minutes, I mean, making 5 substitutions is a helpful thing for a manager in a, you know, in a match where they might be losing or they might be winning and they just want to crush the other team. Just immense.
You know, I really feel bad about teams who are going to play France now. I mean, imagine 70 minutes, you defend properly against them, then the substitute, the ambidextrous, super fast, Ousmane Dembele comes on, provided he's fit. I mean, that's a tough thing for defenders to catch up on. And yeah, these teams can, some teams, not all, who have the adept quality can make use of this trait exactly.
So if this thing happens, we can expect to see more of a pressing football. So even if the player gets tired, one or two of them, they can get replaced, right? So there is a possibility of seeing more attacking and pressing game, if I'm not wrong.
So, yeah, now we have seen how important substitutions can be. You know, watching the Europa final, watching the Champions League final, and a lot was mentioned on substitutions and the timing. Do you think in the international stage, things would be different? People will strategize more on substitutions and bringing on game changers?
Lokesh, talk that to an Argentinian fan who watched his team lose in a final because of a substitute. Seriously. So, yeah, super subs can impact or not. I mean, it all depends on the formation and the synergy the players have on the pitch. I mean, imagine too many players bought onto the pitch, the team loses the rhythm, they lose. It can work either ways. I mean, it can hurt you either ways. So, it all depends on the complexity of the match going on, the substitutions needed or the injury scares the players are carrying on. So, actually, there's a lot of things to look into it. So, really, we can't say that having more subs will actually improve the goal-scoring chances or something. But I do agree with Shubham that high pressing will tend to happen because, obviously, player can be changed because there are 5 people who can be removed and changed often. So, yeah. So, let's see how it will turn out to be.
All right. So, yeah. Talking of that, from my perspective, I do feel that, you know, at least in the international stage, I expect things to be a little different. And I would like to see substitutions happening, in the 60th or 65th minute, so that it gives chance to players to make that impact. I think that's one of the areas where the international managers would be focusing and planning their strategies around. Right, so I'm expecting quite a few people to come off the bench and have a good impact, because, and you know, it's only allowed in three opportunities. You get to make five substitutions. Now that is excluding, say, halftime or before extra time and halftime of extra time. So they do have chances to bring in people slowly and gradually without disturbing the rhythm of the entire team. But it should be according to plans. And you know, I'm looking forward to the strategical decisions that's going to be made. One of the iconic substitutions I remember is of Netherlands, where they changed the goalkeeper. I think that is still fresh in a lot of people's mind, where he made a change for goalkeeper.
Today morning, I was watching that video exactly. Tim Krul came on for Chilesen and he saved two penalties in shootout and Netherlands go through. Just today morning, I was watching that clip, man.
Exactly. That is one of the,
Van Gaal really made a good substitution taking the goalkeeper off. I mean, that's something which generally managers don't tend to do, because if a goalkeeper is able to hold strong for 120 minutes, he's good. He's having good confidence to go to the penalty shootout. Simple as that. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, things like that is something that I'm looking forward to. We'll see. I think there'll be a lot of game changers this time. People looking to prove their points. So, yeah, these are one of the few changes. Now, there's also changes regarding COVID measures. And, if there is an outbreak or if, say, members from the team fall ill or are infected, then there will be changes ready for it, or there should be alternate options. And yeah, so it depends. They say that, as long as there is at least minimum of 14 members or players, which includes one goalkeeper, they should be able to play. And if not enough players are there, then it will be rescheduled. And if it cannot be rescheduled within 48 hours, it would be suspended. And the team that cannot play will have to forfeit the match. So we hope it doesn't come to that. Let's see. We hope it never goes bad. You know, that's one thing. So let's wrap up today's session with, just a final touch on, say, who do you fancy for the Euros? So yeah, let's start with Shubha.
If you are talking with the team's perspective, who I want to win, it would be France. I mean, I would like to see France going all the way and just carry over what they have achieved in the World Cup. I think the squad is good. The manager is good. So I would like France for that.
France. All right. How about you, Aditya?
I would like Portugal to win.
What about you, Nihar? What do you think? Who would win?
France all the way. I mean, with Benzema into the list, I can't see any other team competing against them. Even on their off day, France can scrape through. Even with their B team, they can scrape through. I just can't see anyone beyond France. I don't know why I'm so optimistic about them. I really can't. Just seeing the squad list gives me like shivers. Like, oh my God. And interesting fact about France, I would like to tell you. The under 21 squad valuation is above 500 million. They're under 21. And the next best valuation is around 120. Almost 400 million difference. That's good. How's France are for future too? They are scary. Will be scary.
Yeah, very much so. France is the team to be feared. Now, me being a German supporter, I'll still go for Germany. This is the last tournament where Joachim Löw is going to be managing them. A tenure of 15 years is coming to an end, where He's won the World Cup for them. He's won the Confederations Cup. And he's also had the worst tenure, worst tournament wherein, you know, he lost out in the group stage. So he's had a mixed run, and this is going to be his final tournament. So I hope, again, I hope Germany beats everyone this time. That's my take. So yeah, we will be talking more on the teams, say the tables, the groups, and what we can expect to say in terms of tactical battle or players and team selections in our next episode. So I think that we can wrap for this session. I hope all of you are tuned in. All the ballers, keep listening to us, keep supporting us, and hope to see you soon next week. And yeah, good luck to everyone for the Euros. Cheers.